to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm interviewing Victoria Mixon. Victoria is a professional writer and independent editor and has worked in fiction, non-fiction, technical documentation and poetry for over 30 years. She is the author of The Art and Craft of Story, the Second Practitioner's Manual, as well as some other books, and we're talking about the story one today. So welcome, Victoria.
Thank you, Joanna.
It's so good to finally have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. I know we have known each other for a long time and we just have never actually talked face to face before.
Yeah, and I love the way the internet does this. So let's just start by maybe you could say a few words about what you do, what your site does for authors.
Well, what I do is I work with authors to develop their manuscripts into publishable form. People bring me their books, that they love, that they've been working on, but that they didn't. It's very difficult to know what they're really looking for in the publishing world, and so I help them take this story and these characters and develop the plot and the characters and the overall flow and the language into something that an agent or a publisher is going to be looking for as publishable. Nice. And I work mostly with long-term clients, people who keep bringing me stuff back, more books, they get excited about it.
That's great. And you've got a fantastic blog, which we'll point people to later. But you also have this Art and Craft of Story book. So there are a lot of ways that you have for people to improve their books. But I want us to start by taking a real step back. So if someone wants to write a novel, as you know, NaNoWriMo at the moment, should they start by engineering based on these principles or should they be reviewing it later?
You know, it's very individual to the author, and you will always hear big famous names saying, I never plan anything, I just sit down and go where I go. And that's kind of disingenuous because they have internalized what the basic structure is. So for new writers, I would always recommend figure out where you're going, figure out what your climax is. What is the big thing that's going to happen to these people that changes them forever, that's the big impossible thing that they have to face? Figure that out and then write some notes for yourself on, just basically what you can use for your faux resolution that's going to be the opposite of that. And then think a lot about where did this story start and what's the really big thing that hooked them into it permanently. I personally, when I do my books, I do figure out what the three conflicts are, the plot point at the end of Act 1, and then the middle point, and then the plot point at the end of Act 2. I do figure this stuff out because otherwise I'll ramble. Mm-hmm. And if you do just go, you will wind up with a lot of stuff you have to cut. Mm. But that, I consider that kind of work to be your background work where you're getting to know your characters. So you can do it as your first draft, or you can just do it as lots and lots of unrelated notes that are just piles of stuff that you have to refer back to. Hmm. But I do recommend that you know where you're going, otherwise your story will just fizzle.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. Now, one of the really key points you say in the book is that we have to make the reader care about our story. How do we actually do that?
That has to do with writing really sympathetic characters, and that's not just nice characters, but characters who have really powerful internal conflict. Needing two things that are mutually incompatible and needing them desperately. And so then you set your story up to where your climax is going to be the point where they have to choose between those two things and they think they can't. And so the whole story is how they satisfy one need and then they satisfy the other. And every time they do this, they get themselves in trouble with the opposite need. And this way you bounce them back and forth and back and forth through your whole story until you reach a point where they can't bounce anymore. And that bouncing back and forth between your intense needs is a very human thing. And the more powerful you make the needs, and the more important you make them, the more the reader can identify with your characters and can say, oh yes, I know exactly how that feels. I too am torn between wanting to be loved and wanting to survive or wanting to see justice done in the world and wanting to not get killed by the people who were perpetuating this injustice. You know, those are some of the very basic conflicts that writers use over and over and over again because they are so intrinsic to being alive and to life. And the more you plug into those, the more powerfully your reader will identify with your characters, and the more impossible the situations you put your characters into, the more the reader will be going, oh, but they have to make it, because I want to know how to make it. And that's what makes them keep reading.
Mm. And I guess, you know, to follow on from that, we want to create this reader addiction. That's a phrase that you use, which I think is great, especially for I'm writing a series. So addiction is exactly what we want. So maybe you could give us some tips on that.
Yes, well, addiction has to do with it has to do with a basic push-pull kind of mechanism. And in my book, I talk about how there's tension, where you're creating tension in the plot and in the characters, which translates into a tension inside the reader, which is where you want it to happen. It doesn't help if the tension is only in your characters. If it's not happening viscerally inside the reader, then they're not addicted. They're not hooked in. So you use this, so you create a tension, something where something, you know, intense is happening to this character that this reader really cares about. And then you alternate that with, you give the reader a reward. You give them some kind of an answer, a partial answer to the questions. You let the characters get ahead a little bit. And more than anything, you create resonance, which is where the same thing happens, a similar thing happens more than once, so it becomes symbolic. Flannery O'Connor talked a lot about symbolism, how things recur, and eventually they become a symbol for what's happening to your character. And when the reader sees that thing happen, it happens in the beginning, and then maybe it happens in the climax at the end of Act One, and then it comes back in the climax of the whole story, and the reader really gets a sense inside themselves. It begins to vibrate in them, and it feels good to see that, to go, oh, I'm understanding something deep inside this story that I can't even put into words, but I'm beginning to get something's happening inside me that matters to my whole life, to my whole outlook on what life is. And so between the pushing them away with tension and the pulling them in with that resonance, that back and forth gets them off balance. And so your story is the only thing that they are hanging on to keep themselves balanced. And they have to hang on to it tighter and tighter. And so that, you know, so they're always turning the page. How does this work out? How does this
work? No.
That's what you want.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I really like that explanation. That makes sense. Addiction in a good way. Now, I've just recently written on my blog about you know, the problems of writing a series and continuity stuff. And you focus on the character arc within a book. Now, I wanted to ask you about what your opinion is on character arc across a series, because, you know, if you're planning a long series like Patricia Cornwell or whatever, you can't have these big character arcs in every book. So what do you recommend on that?
Well, to a certain extent, the big names who write series are kind of sort of cheating, because their characters don't really go from a big character arc through life like we all do. But what you do when you create that kind of character is you create somebody who is so complex and deep inside that they have very powerful needs, and maybe they have more than one pair that conflict. So you can address one conflict in one book and another in another. Now, a lot of the series protagonists that you'll see in the big names, they have the same one, like thrillers. They need to see justice done. They need not to get killed. And that is the same need they grapple with in thriller after thriller after thriller. And if you make this very true to this character and you make it, and you make it something that can be played out in complex ways in different relationships, then you can keep revisiting those needs, and you can create little subplots so that they have other needs pulling at them. But it's all about the character's conflicting needs.
Mm.
So the trick to a series is to have a character you can really get into, who's really deep, who you really feel interested in continuing to explore and continuing to get deeper and deeper into who this person is, and why they can never come to peace, because we can't. I mean, you know, you keep living and things keep happening to you. And so your reader identifies with that. Every time you think you've got it all sorted out, the next thing you know, you're in the next story. You didn't have it sorted out. Something else has happened and life continues to drive you crazy.
No, that's great. And the other thing, you know, and this is funny, this is just a question I've just thought of. I was just sitting here thinking, because, you know, a lot of people, like, well, and I do personally have a sort of one-liner idea for the next book in my series. How can people turn a one-liner idea into a fully-fledged story?
Well, it's again, it's about the needs. I was doing this on editing chat for a while. Like, if you, we could do a demonstration here, if you want to just give me your one liner for your story, and I can show you how to do it.
Okay. I'm guessing I'm doing around themes. So my next book is going to be focusing around ancient Egypt and the biblical story of the Exodus and the plagues that afflicted Egypt. But it is a modern thriller.
Okay. So who's your character? This is the same character that was in your first book?
Yeah, so Morgan Sierra and the Arcane Institute, who sort of investigate spiritual and supernatural mysteries.
So what does Morgan need? I mean, what is her driving force in her life?
The story need is to basically stop the evil person from destroying the world with the plagues.
Okay, so she needs to stop the plagues, that's a pretty important need. But what else is going on? Why can't she just walk in and go, okay, plagues are done? What else is happening to her that's keeping her from accomplishing that?
Oh, well, I haven't plotted that out yet.
You can kind of extrapolate that in a thriller and, you know, particularly in something where she's trying to stop somebody from doing something this monumental, that they're going to attack her, that they're going to try to stop her from solving it in some way. And so her need probably is her need to survive herself. So she'll have a need to stop the plagues, to preserve the lives of all these people. And at the same time, she has to preserve her own life. And so this is the point you're going to be going toward, where she's going to have to make a choice at the end, where she's going to come right smack up against those people, where she's got it within her reach. And that's your full resolution. She goes, okay, now I've got it. I can do it. I've triumphed over all my conflicts. And now I'm at that point where you've given her something where if she can just get there and do that, she will have saved everybody from the plagues. And you put her within, like, arm's reach of that. And then you bring in the villain, and they're there face to face with her, and they're going to kill her. And at that point, she is forced then to make a choice. Am I going to go for it? Am I going to brave this villain and continue forward to do what I know will save people? Or am I going to concentrate on saving my life? Now, obviously, in thrillers, they always do save their own lives, although it's possible to set it up where she sacrifices herself, but not if you have a series. So what you'll do is you'll set it up to where she has to make the decision to go for it in the smartest, most capable way she has, and you as the author will have put something in there that is basically a trick so that she can do both, but you force her to choose. You force her to choose to say, I'm going to go for it. And then the reader goes, she's going to die. But you have a little trick in there that you've established where she does it and she doesn't die. And then you take that trick and you put a clue to it back in your hook. And you don't have to know what that is before you get there. But it's usually something that you found clues to as you're writing the book. And then you go back later and you put it in the hook. So the reader sees it first when they're reading. They don't know you didn't know that before you got to the end. Don't write to your solution, to your resolution. Write to that moment where you're going to force her to choose. And then the reader doesn't know you didn't know. They see it and they go, wow, that was brilliant. You knew how to fix it.
No, that's great. So really what we're distilling that down to is you take your idea and then you ask questions and you create conflict and just, you know, go from there basically within the rules of your genre, I would probably add.
Yes, well, you know, and genre, people have asked me how many genres can I mix and what are the rules of genre? And the truth is, you can do pretty much whatever you can get away with in a really well-written story. The problem is that you have to be able to be a good enough writer that you can get away with it. That's why so many writers stick to their genre rules, because then they don't have to go, am I making it, but am I not making it? Mm-hmm. But if you're a good enough writer, that's how genres are created. Depending on what you want to do with genre, you can just stick to the rules, and that will make it much easier on you. You can play with the rules if you want to.
Mm, absolutely. Now, I also wanted to ask you, because I'm a Kindle addict. I'm pretty much 100% now ebook reader. And the Kindle sampling, for me, is a big deal. As in, I download sample. If the book doesn't get me, probably within two clicks of the Kindle page button, it's gone. So what is your advice to authors around, grabbing people in those first few pages? Regardless of genre.
Right. You know, and that's not even a new thing. That's always been true. You know, before we had ebooks, we went into bookstores and we picked up books and we looked and we read a couple of pages here. We flipped through, we read a couple of pages more. And if it didn't grab us, we put it back on the shelf. Mm-hmm. So it's always been true. The really powerful hook that has been always true of genre has become more and more these days that you have to do it in general. But what you do with your hook a lot of times is don't write it first. Go ahead and, write something for a hook, but don't get yourself attached to it, because a lot of times that's your backstory. Hmm. So you start writing and you think the way this character got into this nightmare is they were born. And so you start writing and you write and you write and you write that stuff. That's not necessarily going to hook a reader. It used to in the 1700s. Yeah, people go, oh, Moll Flanders was born. That's fascinating. Now, nobody cares. So you write that for yourself, because you have to know who this character is and you have to know how they got into this situation, what the forces were acting on their lives before they knew. But what you want for your hook is the point at which this character could no longer get out of eventually facing that climax. There was a point at which these forces were acting on them, but they could still get out. They could. They could choose something else. Hmm. But at a certain point, they made a choice that put them on a path where they could no longer get out. They were committed to heading in that direction, and it was a big decision. Excuse me. And it was, you want it to be an event. They made a decision about an event, something that really shook up their world, that changed their life, and that's your hook. So you won't necessarily know what that is until you've written maybe a first draft. I mean, really, the hook is so important, but it is not necessarily the first thing that comes to you. And that's the biggest thing you can really do, aside from not knowing what your climax is, to wreck your book, is to start it someplace other than the hook. And then people want to put the backstory in first, and you go with the really important thing, and then you can put in, say, now these are the forces that were acting on them that forced them into this decision. You can put that in chapter 2 or 3, and then you go back to your story. Now, what happened after they made that decision? Well, then they were in really hot water, and then you keep going from there.
No, that's great. And you mentioned, you know, going back and adding stuff in, you know, the foreshadowing, I guess, you know, it's sort of known as later on when you get it right. And what you just said there about sort of self-editing, how much editing do you think an author can do themselves before they need to get a professional?
You know, you can do a lot, but it really, again, depends on how experienced the writer is. Like a writer who's been doing this a lot for a long, long time probably has a very good idea of what has to go in that book, and they have a very solid voice. You know, somebody like Barbara Cartland, who's been writing forever, but she's been writing forever, and so she knows this is what has to go in my books. And her voice is really good. So, and she probably also has a very established working relationship with her editor, her publisher, what they're going to do, what she's going to do. But for somebody who's just starting out, who doesn't have that editor at their publisher, somebody who doesn't have that experience, whose voice maybe isn't fully developed, who doesn't have a ton of practice with thinking out these plots this way, you can go to an editor in the very beginning. I do a synopsis edit. That's the cheapest thing I do, where you just bring me a synopsis. I can, like I said, I can work from your single sentence and say, I can help you work through what's going to be your climax and what's going to be your hook. And between these two points, what's your faux resolution that's going to, where it's the opposite of your climax, where you think you got it. And then I can help you work out what are three things that are going to happen that are really going to twist things and make things difficult for your protagonist on the way. I can do all that from the beginning. And that can save you a lot of time. But it really depends on what the author is comfortable with. I have a lot of people bring me manuscripts that they sat down and they just wrote. And then they bring them to me. And that's fine if that's how they're comfortable working. A lot of that material turns out being backstory or notes, you know, things that are not going to go into the book. They're just not. I have writers that I'll, when I start working with them, I'll say, now I want you to start writing scenes on how these characters relate to each other. And I want you to write a scene about how these people met each other. None of this stuff is going into the book. But you need to know this about these characters so that when you're writing scenes about them, it's just, it just feels natural. You know how they will behave with each other. You know naturally what's going to happen. And that keeps you from doing anachronisms where in, you know, chapter one, a character will react such and such way to something. And then by the end of the book, they're reacting completely differently, not because they've gone through a character arc, but because you forgot. Or maybe it turned out that's not who they really were. So I do a lot of that with writers. Write this scene. Write that scene for me. Develop this. Answer these questions so that you know. And so when somebody writes an early draft just straight through, they're really answering a lot of those questions for themselves. It's not necessarily material that goes in the final book. But you could do that if that's how you're comfortable working. Or you can start with an outline.
I think that's something I really discovered with my first fiction was how much editing and redrafting and rewriting I had to do. And something that I, this time around, I'm structuring, I'm using Scrivener, which I'm finding is a brilliant tool for scenes and just being able to move stuff out and change the order and that type of thing. So do you use Scrivener? Do you recommend it at all?
I've never used it. I have been writing since the 1970s, you know, since long before computers. So I worked on typewriters. I worked on the manual typewriters for a long time. So I'm used to the whole cut and paste thing. Now, so I do that. I mostly work with people in Word just because that's what they use. I've worked in lots of editors. So I'll talk to them about, you know, we're picking up this scene, we're putting it over here, and we're doing this and we're doing that. So I just use Word.
Yeah.
I break into different documents because a whole book in Word is almost impossible to navigate on this kind of granularity. I'll break it up into chapters or into, you know, Act One or the hook and then work with it that way. But yes, you are going to be moving stuff around and you're going to be taking stuff. And you're going to be putting things in your little outtakes files because you can't bear to part with them. And that's right. I have tons of outtake files, tons of them. You just take it out and you put it there and you say, it's safe. It's okay. It's safe. But now we're going to write the scene that goes in this spot. So there's an enormous amount of that that goes on. And yeah, the writer can do a lot of it themselves. That's why I'm writing these books, so that they can do so much themselves, because I found myself explaining over and over and over again to clients, this is a hook, and this is conflict one, and this is your fulcrum, that's conflict two, and da-da-da-da-da, and this is the climax. And I thought, they don't need to pay me over and over and over again, you know, by the hour to explain this to them. They could just buy a book, and then they can figure out themselves, oh, okay, I did this, and then this. And then by the time they bring it to an editor, it's much better organized, and they have a much better grasp on the story, and then they can get really deep into not just we're going to try to get this in good enough shape that an agent will say, well, maybe there's something there, but this is something that would be a really gripping book that, you know, tens of thousands of readers are going to go, oh, I love this book. I love this writer. And that's your goal. I can't wait for the next book this writer puts out.
Yeah.
That's your prediction.
Yeah. No, fantastic. Now, I have just one more question for you. Well, we just have a few more minutes. I obviously want to be the best writer I can be, and most writers do. But I also want to be looking at a career, you know, making money from fiction, which involves writing a number of books. You can't do it with one unless you're, you know, the breakout thing. So how can we write prolifically and faster, but also with great quality?
You know, there is a choice that you make there, and I know that you had talked to Roz about literary fiction and what that is. What happens with literary fiction is that it has a long, long time typically to kind of gestate in the writer's mind, yet years and years, which is why genre is where people make a living. Mm-hmm. Because genre, you have to get it into your head how to plot, you know, and particularly if you have a series protagonist. People love that. Readers love a series protagonist, but then that saves you all that work of redeveloping the character for every single book. Mm. So you have that. You have this character that you've developed really deeply who has a lot of conflicting needs, but you really need to know, just get it in your bones how to plot. So that every time you sit down, you go, hey, I'm going to put this character in this situation. And then you sit down and you spend, you know, some time going, okay, so what's going to be my climax? What's going to be my hook? Da, 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 da. You plan them all out. And then you plot each one of those out into its hook and its series of conflicts and its little full resolution, its little climax. And you get it down to the point where you can do your scenes that way. You know what your hook is of your scene. You know what your climax is. You know what's that moment right before the climax. We kind of fake the reader out a little bit. And you really develop that skill really in your bones, because that's what allows you to write quickly. When you don't have to sit there going, what would this character do in this situation? I'm not sure where this is going. You know, it's all right there in your notes. And then you sit down every morning and you pull up that scene and you write that scene. And then, you know, you write the next scene. And eventually you'll have a whole book. And, of course, you'll have to do, you know, some edits on it. But it will be basically the final book in that shape. And that's how you get through a lot of books. Mm. I do this all the time. I do this every year. I write a children's book for my son every year, and I sit down and I have 1 month in November because I procrastinate. I didn't even know about NaNoWriMo when I started doing this. I just knew that I had to get this done by December and that I was working. So I'd have to do it in the evening. So I sat down and I plan them out, scene by scene. This is going to happen, that's going to happen. And then every night I sit down and write a scene or two. You know. And by the end of November, by golly, I've got all those scenes written and I've got a whole book. That's how you do genre, and that's how you manage to do several books, you know, so that you can be putting them out there. So you can be a machine regularly and get an income from them.
No.
But you do lose a certain amount of that introspection and that depth of theme and of concept. And you may go back years later and go, wow, if I had dug deeper into that story, I could have unearthed so much more. So it's your choice. You're choosing between the depth and the getting those things written and getting them out there.
No, fantastic. Okay, so where can people find you and your books?
Well, you can always find me at my blog, victoriamixon.com, and my books are at all the major outlets, at Amazon and the iBookstore and Barnes & Noble and Powell's, and you can also go to my blog and link through from there. I'm on Twitter, Victoria Mixon on Twitter, and I'm on Google+, Victoria Mixon on Google+. I have an advice column that you can find through my blog. You can just ask me questions. I'll answer them free. You know, it's like editing, but you don't have to pay for it. And I have an online magazine kind of laboratory that is paid. It's $20 every 6 months. And that's where I write the chapters that eventually wind up in my books. But I develop them. And there's a lot of other stuff there that I can't put in my books, because I will take examples from other people's books. I'll take examples from literature and I'll line edit or I'll analyze them. I did a plot analysis of The Time Traveler's Wife.
Oh.
And I've done some stuff like that on there. And I'm too lazy to go get the permissions to reuse that stuff in my books. So that all resides on the magazine. You can find, I'm doing a lot of stuff out there, but the place to start would be on my blog, victoriamixon.com.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Victoria. That was great.
Thank you, Joanna. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.